So the big question we're going to be discussing in our time today is, how do I live a life that matters? It's an important question, isn't it? Maybe not a question that we ask very often. I tried asking Siri, which is the thing on the computer, what's life all about? And Siri said this, you put your right leg in, and then you put it out again, and then in again and out again, and you shake it all about. That, I'm reliably informed, is what it's all about, is what Siri said. So I asked him again, and he said, I can't answer now, but give me some time to write a long play in which nothing happens. And so I asked him a third time, and he said, interesting question. Interesting question. But there are times, aren't there? There are moments where we do want to know an answer to this question. How do I live a life that matters? Let me put it this way, to help us think about this at a personal level. Let me put it this way. Imagine for a moment that you have a time machine, okay? And you get in the time machine and you go forwards and you go to your own funeral, okay? And I'll stick with it. Imagine you get out and you come in at the back of church and you sit at the back. And you listen, you see your loved ones get up and talk about your life. What would you love to hear them say? I wonder what you would love to hear people say. What would matter in that moment? See, we all want to make the most of the time that we've got, don't we? We all want to live a life that matters. I suppose the question is, how do you do that? How do you do that? Well, what I'd love to do with our time now, I'd love to just look at a few different modern answers to this question, modern answers to meaning, and then we'll spend a little bit of time looking at something that Jesus said. There's a little outline of where I'm going to go just over the page under the bit called talk. So we're down to modern answers to meaning then. What would be some modern answers to this question? How do I live a life that matters? Three things we're going to think about: accumulating stuff, experiencing stuff, and legacy. So one thing, accumulate stuff. Some people would have, probably unspoken, but the idea that if I improve my life, okay, if I take what I've got at the beginning and by the end I've gained more, then I will have succeeded. That will be a successful life. I wonder what you think of that. I think probably for most people, probably most of us would say we don't think that accumulating stuff is what's going to sort of bring real happiness. And yet it can be easy to get sucked into the rat race, can't it? It can be easy to think, well, if I just had a bigger house, or if I just had a promotion, or if I just had a more comfortable retirement, then I'd be happy. It can be easy to get sucked in, but probably I expect most of us would say, life isn't all about possessions and stuff. So what other people say instead then is, okay, it's not about accumulating stuff, but maybe it's about experiencing things. If I have a life that is full of rich experiences, whether that's, I don't know, traveling or holidays or creating wonderful memories with my family or eating fine food or whatever it might be, if I have your beautiful views, if I have a life full of rich experiences, then my life will matter. Younger generations would want to do that and also take selfies while they're going and post online. Complete aside, do you know, on average, how many people die a year taking selfies? Any guesses? It's an average of about 30 people a year, by the way. But anyway, but fulfillment from experiences, it's a tricky drug, this one, fulfillment from experiences. Because obviously experiences, whether that's a holiday or whatever, they're great. But they're over quite quickly. And then you're left wanting, well, like any drug, you want and more. I need another one, and I need another one, and I need another one. There was a member of a famous band called Alex James. He was in the famous pop band called Blur. And he tried this. He tried living for experiences. And there was a moment in his life where they were extremely successful. He could have any experience he wanted. They had bags of money, private jets, Vogue models throwing themselves at the band. Yeah, he could have any experience he wanted. And interestingly, he wrote this: when I look back at that period of my life, it was the bottom of a pit rather than the summit of Mount Fantasticus. I was a morally bankrupt, drunk fatso with a stupid grin and a girlfriend with a murdered heart. Kind of haunting, isn't it? Living, getting your meaning from experiences, that's tricky. It's a tricky one. You need more and you need more and you need more. So look, what other people do then is they would look to legacy. They think, right, I could really contribute something to mankind. And then I'll be remembered, then my life will have mattered. Now, I suppose here the problem is, well, firstly, that's quite hard to do. But even if you manage it, I mean, imagine you invent something that people use every day. Even then, there's no guarantee that you'll be remembered. So let's take, for example, something that people use every day. So like a toothbrush. I mean, I hope we all use a toothbrush every day. Can anybody tell me who invented the toothbrush? No? Apparently it's a man called William Addis. I didn't know that. I had to look it up. Or what about the pneumatic tire? Anyone know? Dunlop, yeah, good. Yeah, a couple of us know John Dunlop. The diesel engine? A man called Rudolf Diesel. But it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, that was an easy one. But it's easy, like, even if you invented something that everybody uses, you might not be remembered for it. And so what some people do then is they look to find meaning in the next generation, in my family. If I have a loving relationship to my family, that will be my legacy. But even that, it's interesting, it's quite short-lived. Again, can anybody here name all of their great-grandparents? Any of us? Interesting, isn't it? Right? It's even that's what, three generations. See, finding your meaning in legacy, very, very short-lived. And so, as I look at these kind of modern answers to meaning, it seems to me that these modern answers, they leave a lot of people with the feeling that meaning's just out of reach. It's just out of reach. A lot of people have this feeling, I'll be happy when. I wonder, do you ever find yourself saying that, I'll be happy when, dot, dot, dot. So when we're younger, maybe it's, I'll be happy when I fall in love. And that happens and it's fine for a while. But before long, it's, oh, I'll be happy when we get married. I'll be happy when I go up the ladder at work. And it's, I'll be happy when we get a home. Then it's, I'll be happy when we have children. Then it's, I'll be happy when the children leave home. Right? Then it's, I'll be happy when I retire. Then it's, I'll be happy when the children come and see me at Christmas. Then it's, I'll be happy when time runs out. You spend your whole life saying, I'll be happy when. I'll be happy when. I'll be happy when. And like Ben mentioned with the gentleman that came into this building recently, a lot of people are wondering, isn't there something more? Isn't there something more? Is there more to life than that? Is there a deeper purpose that we can know? Is there another option on the table? Well, what I'd love to do now is show you a little thing that Jesus Christ said. Now, I don't know what your experience has been of Jesus up to this point in your life, what you might have heard about him, but whether you consider yourself religious or not at all, Jesus is clearly a fascinating figure. I've put a little quote on the right-hand side in the green speech bubble by H.G. Wells, author and historian. And he wrote this once: I'm a historian, I'm not a believer, but I must confess as a historian that this penniless preacher from Nazareth is irrevocably the very center of history. Jesus is easily the most dominant figure in all of history. So look, wherever you're coming from, there's clearly something interesting about Jesus. But it may interest you to know that one of the things that Jesus spoke about was you and your life and your purpose. And I think Jesus says something that is completely revolutionary. It's completely different to those modern answers to meaning. Those modern answers, in one way or another, they are all about me. what I experience, what I achieve, what I leave behind. Whereas Jesus, I think, is going to say that your meaning and your purpose will not be found in you or in what you do. I think Jesus would say there is something more. There is something deeper. Now, I put some words down the bottom of this page that are taken from an eyewitness account of Jesus' life in the Bible called Matthew's Gospel. If you just cast your eyes on those, I'll read them out now. One of them, an expert in the law, tested Jesus with this question: "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." So this man is asking Jesus, what is the greatest commandment? What is the most important thing in life? What is the most important thing to live a life that matters? And notice that Jesus does not say, it's you. Do you see that? Jesus doesn't say it's you, it's what you achieve, it's what you feel, it's what you experience. No, Jesus says, have a look at it. Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it: love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus says it's love. Love. I wonder what you think of that. As a vicar, one thing that often happens is I sit with people after they've lost loved ones and help them think about the funeral, what they want to say. And I must say, this is the thing that people want to talk about. Almost never people want to talk about achievements. Almost never. Almost always what people want to talk about is moments that their departed loved one was loving, was kind. Recently, I sat with a lady. She just lost her father. And it was quite sweet. She kept on talking about a moment as a teenager where her dad had stayed up really late to make sure she got home okay. Whole life to draw on. That was the thing she remembered. Love. A moment of love. But I think Jesus is actually saying something a bit more. He's not just saying, oh, let's all just love each other. He's saying something more interesting than that. Look at the verse with me again, if you will. Verse 37. Look at the first half of what he says here. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. Yeah, loving other people is key. But Jesus, I think, would say here that the main thing... the core of existence, the purpose for which we're made, is to love God, is to know God and his love, to have a relationship with God. See, Jesus in the Bible would say that you are not an accident, that you're made, and I'm made with a purpose to know God and his love. A little bit like, have a look at this. This bottle is made for one bottle top. If I try and fit another bottle top on it, it sort of looks like it's going to work, but it never quite fully works. Why? Well, because it's made for this one. It's made, if you think it's quite fetching pink, it's my daughter's, not mine. It's made for this one. Well, Jesus is saying that like that, you and I, when we look for our purpose in other things, it sort of looks like it's going to work, but it never quite works when we try and find our purpose in these other things. Why? Well, because our purpose that we're made for, according to Jesus, is to know God's love. That's the purpose that we're made for. Now, people have observed this through the centuries. One famous thinker, ancient African thinker called Augustine, put it this way. I've put this in the first red speech bubble on the quotes page. He said it this way: "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you." Our hearts are restless, he said, he observed, until they find their rest in God's. See, the heart of the Christian faith would say that although every one of us, none of us have loved God as we should, every one of us has turned away in different ways, big ways and small ways, we've ignored God's, but that God loves you and me so much that in Jesus Christ, he came into this world to pay for everything we've done wrong so that we can be drawn back into his love. That we can come back into a relationship with him that starts now and lasts through death forever. We get swept up into something that is much, much bigger than our own little lives, our own achievements, our own ambitions. A much, much bigger story of knowing God and his love. And as Augustine here and billions of other Christians through history would say, as we come back into that relationship, their experience has been that we find that purpose and that meaning that we long for. And so look, in summary then, how do I live a life that matters? What is the meaning of life? Well, Jesus would say to you and me today, there is more. You are made for more. But that won't be found in you or in what you do. It will be found in love. For other people, yes, but first and foremost, in love for God and coming back into a relationship with him. Look, I wonder what you think of all that. I'm sure that must raise lots of questions for people. To help us think and discuss, over on the back page, there are some questions there to get us discussing around tables. And in a few minutes, I'll get back up to field any questions or comments or thoughts that people have. So maybe turn around tables now and have a think about those discussion questions, and I'll get back up in a little while. Over to you.